Arriving here is like nothing I have ever experienced. Everyone from the village is here to greet us. Everyone wants to know who we are. We're special simply because we're new. I don't know if I can describe how profoundly their real and genuine warmth affects me.
This week on the Nature Stories podcast, producer Stephanie Geyer-Stevens travels to a remote part of the Solomon Islands, where islanders work to preserve their traditional cultures of boat building and navigation. I'm Samantha Brown with Atlantic Public Media, curating this podcast in collaboration with the Nature Conservancy and the Public Radio Exchange. Each week, we bring you pieces about the intersection of people and place. Up now, an excerpt from The Story of Lata, produced and narrated by Stephanie Geyer-Stevens with Outer Voices.
Steve and Cheryl Kornberg are sailing the Gershon II, a 50-foot yacht with a steel hull, custom designed to withstand the extreme sailing conditions of the South Pacific. Whoever came up with that name, you'd think they'd never sailed on it.
I have to turn to starboard, huh?
The Gershon II docks on the north end of Vanuatu.
Take it forward from the cleat.
We're sitting in the cockpit, talking about the trip we'll be taking to the Solomon Islands. Steve shows us a chart of the area.
Well, this is a chart that shows an area from Fiji to Australia, Solomons and New Guinea, south to northern New Caledonia. So where we are right now, according to this weather facts, up here in Luganville, basically, you're looking at 25 to 35 knot winds out there today, which is one of the reasons that we've been waiting a couple days for the strong winds to go by. And in Fiji, they call the situation of a strong high creating reinforced trades a bogiwalu.
Modern navigation is incredibly high tech.
GPS has revolutionized, you know,
right.
Cruising. You just hit a button and it tells you where you are, and you plot it on a chart, and that's where you are.
Navigation has changed a lot in Steve's time.
We started sailing, there was no GPS, there was no sat-nav. You only had a sextant. That's why not that many people went to sea. You had to learn how to shoot stars or the sun and fix your position with a sextant and a timepiece. And when you went through the islands, you had to take bearings off of each point and continually cross them and do these, you know, hand-bearing compass things. And navigation took up the most of your time. And then even then, you only found out where you were maybe once or twice a day. And the rest of the time, you were keeping track of your course and speed to estimate where you were.
Meph Wyeth and Terry Causey are on the Gershon as well. They worry that traditional skills like celestial reckoning, which is navigating by the stars with a sextant, is no longer being taught to new sailors in the Western world.
Is celestial still a requirement for getting a captain's ticket?
No. In fact, they've dropped it as a course in the Annapolis Navy Academy.
That's
I've
scary.
Heard. Yeah.
It is scary because it's a fundamental knowledge. It should be basic training.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to lose it in our culture, just like the Polynesians lost navigation in their culture.
Exactly.
Steve may contemplate the olden days of navigating with a sextant, but he has a great respect for the truly ancient art of Polynesian navigation.
The Polynesians have always dead reckoned their longitude. Until they developed a timepiece, nobody could determine their longitude at sea. You learn that from the Southern Cross is vertical, and the distance between the top star and the bottom star is equal to the distance between the bottom star and the horizon. You were on the latitude of the Big Island. And if you come up from Tahiti and kept to the east, hopefully, when that Southern Cross gets to that point, you turn left. And certainly it worked. The canoe people stay up all the time. I mean, they keep track of their course and speed in their mind. And they have to adjust in their mind. They learn how to keep their course. And the wind can change and the waves can change. They don't have compasses, so how do you keep on a course to know where you're going? And that's their skill, and they definitely do it.
The tapuki canoes themselves were perfected over time to ply the open ocean. Calling them canoes might conjure up the wrong image for what these beautifully engineered and graceful vessels were really like.
When you see the thing face on, it's a perfect delta wing shape, and it's extremely aerodynamic. Apparently, the shape creates vortices which draw the wind off the top of the sail and thus enable it to move forward with much more thrust than an ordinary sail. And if you talk to the chief about that, they understand that principle perfectly well, that they have their own way of describing it. But it's a very scientific and well-thought-out design and highly aerodynamic. And it works the same way as the wing on a stealth bomber, basically.
Steve's own keen interest in traditional navigation is his incentive for making this voyage.
I hope we get to learn something about their system of navigation. I think that would be really interesting, especially to compare it with other things that have been written and done.
Right. I think we could learn about ourselves by learning about what the ancients did, and maybe we'll learn that we're regressing instead of progressing.
So Lata went behind his people, and they were walking on a trail through the forest. And by the side of the road, there was a bird called Te'ube. And the bird had a leg that was tangled in a vine, and it couldn't get away. It couldn't fly or move. So when this line of men with their axe walked by, the bird asked the first person, "Oh, please, would you free my leg from this rope and set me free?" And the first person said, "Oh, why don't you ask the next person? I think they might do it for you." And then the bird saw the next person come by and asked the same question. "Oh, please, would you help me to free my leg?" And every person in that group, maybe 10 people, they said, "Oh, ask the next person." And then along came Lata, following the group, and Te'ubi bird said, "Please, would you free my leg?" And Lata said, "Oh, yes, definitely, I'll free your leg." And so Lata freed the leg of the Te'ubi bird.
We sail for 3 days and nights from the northern coast of Vanuatu. On one side of us is the North Fiji Basin, and on the other side is the Coral Sea. According to the chart, we're headed for the island of Taumako. The days are gray and the ocean is rolling. 10-foot swells in the day, and then at night, gales blow and the swells rise to 15 to 20 feet. It's July, winter in the South Pacific. The wind and the water are still warm, but the sky fades in and out of sun, slate gray to blue, to clear sparkling light, then back to gray. We don't see any other boats, though we do see frigate birds from time to time. Other than that, it's just six of us on a big sailboat. It's so quiet here. On the third morning, the sun below the horizon turns the flat ocean pink, and we see land, a volcano rising straight out of the ocean. Lights on a little fishing canoe about a mile off the starboard side, the first boat we've seen in 3 days and nights of sailing. As we anchor, canoes start to come out over the reef towards the boat to greet us.
About 5 feet, Steve.
Can you put that on that ballard over there?
Kahula, Kahula, Gershon 2. Yes, is that you, Mimi?
We're now within 100 miles of our destination, but we can't complete the last leg of the journey to the island where I hope to talk with Polynesian elders and American anthropologist Mimi George.
Kahula,
so far, CB radio communication is as close as we're getting.
Mimi, we're getting stepped on. Let's wait a few minutes.
The problem seems to be that the custom official who needs to stamp our passports is still in the capital city, hundreds of miles away, because there are no boats running to Tumotu province.
Mimi, Gershon 2.
Gershon, Kahula here. How do you read me?
Oh, you're barreling in nice and clear. How do you read me?
Just perfect, thank you. And how are you all? Over.
We're all fine. We're in Lata. We had a few-day delay for that strong Bogiwalu weather that we had, the real strong trade winds, and we ended up having a real nice trip, and we got in at dawn this morning. The problem, of course, is clearance. Over.
Yes, it is a problem, and have you learned the solution yet, or have you...
It turns out that the boats aren't running because of a lack of diesel fuel.
Yeah, Roger, Meff got the letter, and we did talk to the police guy who said that the immigration clearance people could come in on the plane on Saturday.
It takes 5 days to straighten out the situation. And we finally head for Taumako. When we arrive, Mimi's there to greet our boat and help us across the island.
Where we're going to is where Lata was born. Lata is the culture hero of these islands and most islands through the Pacific. The Polynesian first person who built and sailed voyaging canoe. Chariot. So this is it.
Is there any way to get to the beach here and walk to the village?
Yeah. Yeah. We have to work with the tides, that's for sure. But we're willing to, you know, the people here are very willing to help. If it involves a motor canoe, an outboard, then they've got to buy the petrol.
Yeah.
We've got to provide the petrol. So anyway, we'll go there in a canoe, but we might go back in conditions where we have to get out and walk around at times, yeah. And it's good that you have dry bags. Bring a flashlight if you have it. If not, we have lanterns.
Arriving here is like nothing I have ever experienced. Everyone from the village is here to greet us. Everyone wants to know who we are. We're special simply because we're new. I don't know if I can describe how profoundly their real and genuine warmth affects me.
Kumara, this potato, I think maybe potato in your land.
Over the next few days, I get familiar with my surroundings.
Rice, breadfruit.
Life on the island moves with the slow rhythm of the waves on the shore. Children hunt for fish and bats with homemade bows and arrows. Teenagers play ukulele when their chores are done. Our friend May shreds a coconut to make pudding, while the neighborhood women weave thatch for a roof and chat with mouthfuls of betel nut. May's husband guts fish, a huge catch, nearly filling his canoe. Onshore, an old man carves a canoe paddle while children gather to watch.
So after Lata freed the leg of the Te'ubi, the Tu'ubi asked Lata, "Where are you going?" And Lata said, "Oh, I'm just following these people. They're going to make a canoe, and I'm just interested to see what they do." And the Te'ubi said, "So you want to make a tepuke? You want a canoe?" And Lata said, "Oh yes, I would like a tepuke." And Te'ubi said, "Oh, would you like to cut a ko'ilo tree for your tepuke?" And Lata said, "Oh yes, I would like to do that." And the Te'ubi said, "Well, I will help you do that. I will show you how to build the tepuke."
I'm starting to get why I had so much trouble getting to this corner of the Solomon Islands. It's part of a pretty fundamental problem being faced by everyone here. While small canoes are still in use for short island hops, traditional long-distance voyaging canoes, the tepuke canoes, are no longer being built, and hardly anyone knows how to sail them anymore. So as Western influences took hold, the idea was that modern ships and planes would bring the Solomons into the 21st century. But the old tepuke ran on wind and wave power. Modern boats need diesel fuel. And because of geographic isolation and a subsistence lifestyle, the Solomon Islanders have never developed a strong cash economy. And so the government boats, which carry supplies and people to and from the outlying islands, are sporadic, unreliable, and rare. What happened to Joanne recently is a perfect example of this problem.
Oh, Joanne, my granny, she's been here for about 4 months here in town.
That's Joanne's grandson, Eddie Cooper. Eddie and his sister Frida live in the capital, far from Tuamotu province. Several months ago, Joanne traveled from her home island to visit her grandchildren. She only meant to stay there for a few days, but ended up stuck in the capital for 4 months, unable to get home, because there was no boat to her island in all that time.
And she always asked me, when will the ship go up to Tuamotu province?
Eddie and Frida can't get back home to Tuamotu province very often themselves.
I'm living with my uncle here in Honiara because I'm doing my studies here. I have to live with somebody close to the center. For us students, we have a problem with it because, you know, we have to go to a place where it's quite close to a learning center to continue with our education.
It's because of transport difficulties. There's no ship available, so I only go once a year, that's in December.
The irony is that the islanders are probably less able to travel and trade between the islands than they were in pre-modern times.
People try and get petrol where they can.
Ben Hepworth was born and raised in Tuamotu province, along with his brother Ross. Here at the dock, he's finally filling his fuel cans.
We actually haven't had a petrol run to the Reef Islands since back in May, though there have been ships who have had a few drums of petrol on board. Where the airfield is at Lata, they've had fairly regular petrol run, but they're 45 miles away from us and the petrol comes in 44-gallon drums. Not easy to transport those drums from there to here. And then, you know, occasionally we go 6 to 8 weeks without a ship. And there's nothing very regular about it.
This problem is not just simple economics. We'll find out more after the break. You're listening to the story of Lata from Outer Voices.
To hear the rest of this piece, or to hear more stories like it, stop by the Public Radio Exchange at prx.org. The Nature Conservancy provides support for this podcast online at nature.org/stories, committed to protecting nature and preserving life. If you have thoughts or feedback, please write to us at podcast@tnc.org. I'm Samantha Brown with Atlantic Public Media in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. Join us next week for a brand new Nature Stories podcast.